This podcast is brought to you in part by Contact My Politician, a free, fast way to find your local and national politicians and to keep them accountable. Click on their banner at our website, michaelmedved.com.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day for maybe even some Democrats out there. Maybe Americans of any stripe, of any perspective, to get serious about what happened with Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation to the Supreme Court. This was not an illegitimate process. If you believe that it was, you can call me. And please explain to me what's illegitimate about it. It is provided for in this Constitution. It's provided for in statute law. There was no violation of the law. Why is it illegitimate? Any more than any of those other 29 justices who were nominated during an election year was an illegitimate appointment. I believe that there is a certain amount of embarrassing distance between waiting for 8 months in the case of Merrick Garland, who was appointed by Obama, and the case of Amy Coney Barrett, where they moved forward within about a month to get it done. There's inconsistency. Is there anything illegal or corrupt or crooked about it? Absolutely not. The fact is that the Republicans controlled the United States Senate. They had just been voted into control of the United States Senate in the 2014 election when the vacancy came up for Justice Scalia. And because Republicans felt very strongly about Justice Scalia and his legacy, they wanted a more Scalia-like replacement. And they ended up getting it, not because they pushed so many arms or twisted so many arms or somehow used dark forces in the Senate. They got the delay because they controlled the Senate, because you, the people of the United States, we now have direct election of the senators, elected a Republican majority. Then bingo, in 2016, you did it again. You did. You returned that Republican majority to the Senate. This is one of those things that that people need to remember. It was two in a row. And you wanted the Senate to continue under Republican control. And then in 2018, even though it was a big Democratic year, and even though the Democrats gained 41 seats in the House, and it was a bad year for Republicans, guess what? For the third time in a row, the American people voted for the Senate to be controlled by a majority of Republicans. I so ardently wish that that will happen again this year. And by the way, it's a fascinating thing. The Manchester Union Leader, which is the largest newspaper, it's really the only daily newspaper with any influence in the state of New Hampshire, which is one of the key swing states. That's a state where President Trump lost to Hillary Clinton. He lost by only 1%, and he's hoping to flip the state. It looks very unlikely. He's running more than 10 points behind. I don't think he will swing the state of New Hampshire. But the largest newspaper, which is traditionally a Republican newspaper, has endorsed Biden. And they believe that Biden is the necessary man for this moment in history. But they also endorsed in an editorial yesterday how important it was for Biden's success to make sure there is a continuation of the Republican Senate so that we have something like balance, so that we have some basis for actually forcing the kind of bipartisanship that Biden has actually promised. It's one of the things he's promised to change in America about the approach of President Trump. So keep him honest. If anyone out there doubts it, there's actually a little piece of this editorial in the Manchester Union Leader that's featured in the Wall Street Journal today. We can get back to that. But when you're talking about the craziness of the reaction to the confirmation of Judge Barrett into Justice Barrett, there's this story. Kamala Harris, yes, that's right, the wannabe vice president at the moment, Kamala Harris vowed that Democrats won't forget a move that they have described as a power grab. Here's what she said. Her statement last night after the confirmation of Justice Barrett was, "Today Republicans denied the will of the American people by confirming a Supreme Court justice through an illegitimate process, all in their effort to gut the Affordable Care Act and strip health care from millions with pre-existing conditions. There will be no law case that decides that. It's not going to happen." And she used the terms illegitimate and denying the will of the American people. Where is this illegitimate? Generally, if you're a lawyer and you use a term like illegitimate, there's some violation of the law. There's some violation of the standards. When our granddaughter, our oldest granddaughter, who's looking forward to her fourth birthday coming up in a couple of months, when Julia was asked to explain what her uncle, our son-in-law Mark, does for a living, Mark's an attorney and a very good one and just a prince of a guy. And so she said, she was going through this with her father on videotape. And the question was, okay, what does your grandmother do? And her grandmother's a clinical psychologist. And she says, a psychologist helps people with their problems. That's right. That's true. That's the whole idea. She got it. And then she asked, what does Uncle Mark do? He's a lawyer. What does a lawyer do? And she paused for a moment. She gave the best explanation I've ever heard. A lawyer helps you understand the rules. That's the idea. Bravo for Julia. What a wonderful girl. Okay. The point about all this is really, we're not talking about a four-year-old here with Kamala Harris. At least we shouldn't be. We're talking about an attorney. Thank you. I love the sound effect. We're talking about an attorney. We're talking about a former attorney general of the nation's largest state of California. And she says that this is illegitimate? Where? How? 1-800-955-1776. Somebody tell me why it's illegitimate. She said, we won't forget this. And Senator Lisa Murkowski, the Republican who voted no in terms of moving forward, but then when it came to the choice, yes or no, she voted yes. She said, I don't see Justice Barrett overturning the decision in Roe v. Wade based on the weighting of reliance factors, she said. And this goes back to some of the idiotic, I mean, truly idiotic questioning that Kamala Harris did of Amy Coney Barrett during her confirmation hearing. Remember, it was all virtual. Do you remember what Kamala Harris asked her? She said, do you believe that climate change is happening and is threatening the air we breathe and the water we drink? Harris asked Barrett. I will not express a view on a matter of public policy, especially one that is politically controversial, the justice responded. Thank you, Judge Barrett, said Senator Harris. You've made your point clear that you believe it's a debatable point. Okay, she didn't say that it was a debatable point. She said she didn't want to discuss it because it's not her job to make policy or to determine what to do about climate change. We will be back this hour. We're going to be looking at what has been chosen by the week as the 10 worst political ads of this campaign season, all on the presidential campaign. We will get to that and much more in this edition of The Medved Show. On the show, there are so many investment opportunities that come up that you hear about after the fact, after people with, quote, inside connections, angels and VCs, get in on those most promising companies. Well, you have to wait till you read about them reaching multi-billion dollar valuations before you get a chance to invest. But the great thing about our crowd is it gives you a chance to get in on the ground floor if you want to. If you see something that sounds very solid, there are a series of our crowd companies and startups that have sold to very large international companies like Nike and more. You can check it out. Go to michaelmedved.com. Click on the banner for Our Crowd. It costs you absolutely nothing. It's fascinating information of some of the most exciting new companies in the world. No kidding. And you can be part of it from the beginning without some kind of enormous accumulation of wealth. But maybe Our Crowd can help you do that. Check it out. Go to Our Crowd. It's my brother's company based in Jerusalem, Israel. And it's right up there at michaelmedved.com. On The View, which is becoming very frustrating because I hate it when people get stuff so incredibly wrong. Sonny Hostin attacked conservatives over court packing. Now, why? Conservatives have never been in favor of court packing. What it means is she clearly doesn't even understand what court packing is and why it's not a good thing. But we will explain that in just a moment. Here's clip 8. It's Sonny Hostin on The View. Listen.
We all know that the Republican Party has been packing the Supreme Court for decades. They've been packing the judiciary for decades. Trump has put now three justices on the Supreme Court and just dozens and dozens of judges on the federal judiciary. So I think what we're going to see is perhaps the Democrats unpacking the Supreme Court so that there is more of a balance, because right now the Supreme Court does not reflect the values of America. The Supreme Court now reflects the minority of the values of America. And that is important because it's supposed to really reflect what is a balance of American values, with a swing justice deciding sort of what the law is. And that is not what we are seeing now. So this is going to lead, I think, to an unpacking of the court.
Unpacking? Does that mean they're going to try to impeach people like Amy Coney Barrett? You can't impeach justices of the Supreme Court. Not easy. They tried it under Thomas Jefferson, and that didn't go well. There's a justice named Samuel Chase. But look, the idea that there's supposed to be a balance, the truth of the matter is, and you can go back and look, this court, the court that had on it Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and you can go back for 20 years, you can go back since she started, you know what the most common court vote is? And honestly, you can go look at it. You look at the numbers year after year after year. Most cases that they hand down, that they decide, are 9-0. There's unanimity. Yeah, that's right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg voting the same as Antonin Scalia, because it's an obvious call. And there are relatively few cases that are 5-4 where there's a swing vote. Sometimes when the court takes these big, really unsupported leaps into power, like changing the nature of marriage in every single state when it's supposed to be up to the states themselves to decide the nature of marriage. Well, okay, that sometimes you do have 5-4 decisions, and where there are different people representing different points of view. But those points of view are never supposed to be, for instance, what the court thinks should be the definition of marriage. The question is the way that the states have been defining it, and the states that maintain the standard of one man, one woman, did that go against constitutional principle? I don't think it did. But then again, there was a 5-4 decision with Justice Kennedy writing the decision. It is a decision that Justice Scalia derided. But that's the way it works. And again, you did not hear Republicans saying, this is a day of infamy, this is a illegitimate. It's legitimate. It's ill-advised. I think it's a misapplication of the law and the Constitution. But this griping and the idea of court packing. What court packing is Franklin Roosevelt was getting a lot of his New Deal programs in 1933, in particular in 1934, 35. A lot of his New Deal programs were decisively thrown out by the courts as violations of the Constitution. And he was frustrated. So after he won a landslide election victory in 1936, and FDR carried 46 of 48 states. He carried every state except for Vermont and New Hampshire. And, okay, so with this landslide behind him, he said, you know what, I'm going to go after the Supreme Court. And we're going to neuter the Republican majority in the court by appointing 5 new justices, which Congress could create. And yet, even his Democrats, who controlled more than 2/3 of both houses of Congress, thought that's a terrible idea, because it then makes the court a reflection of the political will of the majority party. And again, FDR went down to defeat. And if Biden and Harris try that, if they are elected president and vice president, they will go down to crushing defeat as well, and deserve to. The Ilhan Omar had this to say. This is clip 9. Listen.
It's leaving so many Americans really worried about what this would mean for them, what it would mean for women in regards to their reproductive rights, what it would mean for immigrants like myself when it comes to our religious liberty, what it would mean for our brothers and sisters in the queer community or the trans folks in our community. When it comes to their rights to equality, we also know that there are so many people who are worried because they have pre-existing conditions. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. This is going to impact workers who've been fighting for their right to unionize in their workforce. And so it is.
Okay, stop, a really stop, important stop, 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 stop. They can't do that. The court is not set up to draft legislation and to change everything. What they do is they either accept or they reject and overrule and declare unconstitutional laws that legislatures pass. What are some of the best ads that have happened this campaign season? We'll play some of the winners and losers for you. A collection of campaign ads coming up. And on the Michael Medved show, they over at theweek.com, there's a writer named Jeva Lang, who apparently has spent a great deal of time sorting through literally hundreds of political ads that are being featured this year. Believe it or not, there is going to be a total of about $3 billion, that's $3,000 million, in television ads that are paid for by the Biden and the Trump campaign. The Trump campaign started off, and they've been buying ads all year. Biden didn't have any money, you may remember, until after he won the Democratic nomination. But since then, he has accumulated record levels of donations. The level of average donation for Joe Biden is $73. The level of average donation for President Trump is $71. So both sides have relied mostly on relatively small contributions, but still the amounts of money the Biden campaign is pumping even into long shot states. They just got $15 million. That's not a small contribution from Mike Bloomberg to try to contest Texas and Ohio, both of which President Trump won handily last time, and I think he'll probably win this time. But what's interesting about these ads is that with all of that money, even the ads that the Week lists as the worst are not that bad. You can kind of understand why somebody would want to spend money on them. But let's start from the top. And one of the three ads for which they actually gave the rating of A+ was an ad featuring President Trump. It's called "The Best Is Yet to Come." And I know that that phrase became kind of notorious to some people because it was shouted at the top of her lungs by Kimberly Guilfoyle at the Republican convention. But this is not that. This is President Trump at his very best, giving, I think, the best, most effective speech of his presidency on July 4th in front of Mount Rushmore. The ad sounds like this.
I am here as your president to proclaim before the country and before the world, this monument will never be desecrated. These heroes will never be defaced. Their legacy will never, ever be destroyed. Their achievements will never be forgotten. And Mount Rushmore will stand forever as an eternal tribute to our forefathers and to our freedom. We are the nation that gave rise to the Wright brothers, Harry and Tubman, George Patton, the great Louis Armstrong, Elvis Presley, Ella Fitzgerald. We settled the Wild West, won two world wars, landed American astronauts on the moon. Centuries from now, our legacy will be the cities we built, the champions we forged, the good that we did, and the monuments we created. America's destiny is in our sights. America's heroes are embedded in our hearts. America's future is in our hands. And ladies and gentlemen, the best is yet to come.
And then it shows fireworks exploding in the air over Mount Rushmore. And you saw, and you could hear there, the jets soaring overhead. It's visually very well done. And it recalls a unifying speech by President Trump that was very effective. And the ad looks great. Joe Biden for the World Series, which game six tonight, Clayton Kershaw, pretty interesting. For the World Series, he prepared an ad which is actually in some ways an answer. It's called "Go From There." And it also features patriotic images and patriotic music and the wonderful voice of Sam Elliott. The ad sounds like this, and it's illustrated by imagery of Joe Biden meeting various Americans, often masked, and getting closer to them, and then basically the positive morning in America kind of imagery. Listen.
There is only one America. No Democratic rivers. No Republican mountains. Just this great land. And all that's possible on it. With a fresh start. Cures we can find. Futures we can shape. Work to reward. Dignity to protect. There is so much we can do if we choose to take on problems and not each other, and choose a president who brings out our best. Joe Biden doesn't need everyone in this country to always agree, just to agree we all love this country and go from there.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
That's probably one of the two A+ ads that Biden had The other one is a very, very brief ad, and it features an excerpt from one of President Trump's rally speeches. That, Jeremy, is number one, "You'll Never See Me Again." It's only a 15-second ad. Listen.
If I lose to him, I don't know what I'm going to do. I will never speak to you again. You'll never see me again.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
It's pretty funny. And he also apparently featured that in the World Series. Another ad from President Trump tried and gets a B- from The View was President Trump trying to counteract some of the criticism of him regarding the coronavirus. This is number 10, carefully, Jeremy.
President Trump is recovering from the coronavirus, and so is America. Together, we rose to meet the challenge, protecting our seniors, getting them life-saving drugs in record time, sparing no expense. President Trump tackled the virus head-on, as leaders should.
I can't imagine that anybody could be doing more.
We'll get through this together. We'll live carefully, but not afraid.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
You'll notice the voice of Dr. Anthony Fauci in that ad. I can't imagine really anyone doing more. He protested the use of his voice and image in that ad because he said he wasn't talking about the president. He was talking about the CDC and the governmental task force and people working together like him and Dr. Birx and Director Redfield of the CDC. He wasn't talking about Trump. But the Trump campaign said, look, it's not legally protected, and no, he's not going to sue. When we come back, we'll go to some of the ads that they at least consider the worst. If you have one that sticks in your mind that you would like to add to the conversation, you can give us a call. 1-800-955-1776. There's another strange ad that features Joe Biden and a sports car. And I don't really understand the point that they're trying to make with that, but we will go to that and more in the list of the best and worst ads of 2020. What a year. And we'll also be talking about the state of the race. And I don't mean the race for the popular vote, but the nitty-gritty, the Electoral College, paths to win. Yeah, there are paths for both candidates, and people in all parties know that. We'll get to that and more coming up on The MedVet Show.
The best is yet to come.
And on the Michael Medved show, one of the ads that gets a fairly low grade, it's a D, actually. It's a very strange ad. I'm not sure what they're trying to do. And since President Trump is in Michigan today, we'll play this. Maybe it's aimed at auto workers who work at GM. Apparently, Joe Biden has long been fascinated by Corvettes. Who hasn't? And it's him looking over and then driving, but not driving very far, a Stingray. And it's a 1967 Corvette Stingray. And it's American-made. And Joe is wearing a T-shirt. And the ad sounds like this.
I used to think I was a pretty good driver. If I didn't get a chance to flat shift in the second, I was afraid I'd go through those guys.
Tomorrow morning, we're talking about cars and what car you'd like to see come back.
I love this car. Nothing but incredible memories. Every time I get in, I think of my dad and Beau. God, can my dad drive a car? Oof. The thing I like most is the setup right here. And you feel like you're in complete control. This is just boom. Now, you stand in the front here. This is iconic industry. How can American-made vehicles no longer be out there? I believe that we can own the 21st century market again by moving to electric vehicles. And by the way, they tell me, and I'm looking forward, if it's true, to driving one, that they're making an electric Corvette and go 200 miles an hour. You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. So I'm excited about it.
Okay, there is the ad called Joe Biden Gets Vetted. I think it's an attempt to answer some of the attacks that have piled on him, because he's had as part of his campaign for a while the idea that within the next 30 years, which is a blink of an eye, within the next 30 years that we're going to have to transition out of oil and to other forms of energy. And I think he's trying to assure people he still loves the old gas guzzler cars. I don't think a 1967 Vette Stingray would have federally approved mileage standards today, but there it is. And one of the very worst ads, there are two ads that are really terrible from the Trump campaign, and I don't even see who they're aimed at. One is Joe Biden is Bernie Sanders' Trojan horse, where they use some imagery that seems to have been borrowed from the Brad Pitt film, not a very good film, from 2004, called Troy. And it shows a Trojan horse, which has Joe Biden's face sort of on top of the great big wooden horse, and then AOC and Bernie Sanders' faces put not very effectively on top of people pouring out of the horse and invading America. And the same idea is an ad called Inspired by Actual Events. And it's sort of like a horror movie trailer. And yet the climax of the horror movie is Joe Biden appearing and sort of putting his hands over a victim's shoulders, alluding to those complaints from earlier in the campaign that Joe Biden would smell women's hair, that kind of thing. And the ad, which got an F rating from the Week, sounds like this.
My dog face, pony shoulders.
My memory is not as good as, am I doing this again?
Please clarify, specifically, have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not. What do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say to President Trump, who brags about his test and makes your mistake an issue for voters?
American public, judge my physical and mental filter. My physical as well as my mental fitness.
Why?
You're getting nervous, man.
Oh my And then there's blood dripping and monsters coming up, and the final monster is Joe Biden putting his hands on somebody's shoulder. They explain in justifying this particular kind of ad, and I think that is really actually part of it, and the same one with the Joe Biden being a Trojan horse for Bernie Sanders and company. The idea is these are trolling ads. They are not meant to persuade people. They're meant to get out the base, because basically, for a lot of the stuff in the ad, the soundtrack for which we just played, unless you really follow the campaign pretty closely, you don't get it. And it's an attempt to entertain and solidify that community feeling that you have if you are part of the campaign. And rather than any effort to try to change people's opinion or change their preference for either candidate. And that's, by the way, one of the big factors of this election is how few people remain undecided or are even thinking about actually voting third party for Joe Jorgensen or Howie Hawkins or any of those dynamic. I think one of the running mates, I think Joe Jorgensen's running mate is named Spike Cohen. And just something about voting for somebody named Spike altogether, which raises some questions. Speaking of raising some questions, President Trump was asked by reporters on Friday night, I didn't know that, whether he had seen Rudy Giuliani's appearance in Borat's subsequent movie film. In the scene, which not the most glorious moment for Rudy Giuliani, the Steve Herman, who's the Voice of America White House bureau chief, reported the president's response, writing that President Trump answered, I don't know what happened, but years ago, you know, Sasha Cohen tried to scam me, and I was the only one who said, no way, that's a phony guy, and I don't find him funny. I don't know anything about him other than he tried to scam me. He came in as a BBC British broadcasting anchor. To me, he was a creep. Thank you all. So, of course, this is a great opportunity for Sacha Baron Cohen. And the Borat sequel is not nearly as enjoyable as the first. It's a disappointing film at best, disgusting at worst. But Sacha Baron Cohen had a fairly clever response. He tweeted back at the president when that president's response to his movie went out viral. Sacha Baron Cohen said, Donald, I appreciate the free publicity for Borat! Exclamation point. I admit, I don't find you funny either, but yet the whole world laughs at you. I'm always looking for people to play racist buffoons, and you'll need a job after January 20th. Let's talk. And then he gives a place where the president can reach him. Do I think that is likely to turn up, to have President Trump turn up in a Sacha Baron Cohen film? Not very likely. We will be talking about the shape of the race and the deployment of Bigfoot. Yes, Bigfoot as an icon and a symbol in the midst of a great pandemic. And where is that pandemic going? And what does that mean for our politics? And basically, we have, until they have some kind of vaccine ready, still months and months to go. And during most of that time, President Trump is going to be president, whether he wins or loses a week from today. So what actually can, must, should our leaders do about any of that? And we'll also talk about some of the dividing lines that actually separate people in families. Why such a profound gender gap in this particular election? All of that and much more coming right up in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Right now, at this moment of crisis, a lot of people have a lot more on their minds than just normal aches and pains. But I'll tell you why dealing with those normal aches and pains is so important. Because one of the things you need to do to strengthen yourself, to